Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yadyatana sarga sukha vasheshitam. Shristasya suktasya kritasya shobhanam. Tenajanabhi skriti maj janmanasyad. Hey, Hadir Yad Bhajatam Sham Tatanoti Yad Yatra Nasarga Sukha Visheshitam Srishtasya Suktasya Kritasya Shobhanam Tina Janabhi Smriti maj janma nasyad. Varshe harir yad bhajatam sham tanoti. Yad yatra nasvarga sukha visheshitam. Vistasya suktasya kritasya shobhanam Tena janabhi smriti maj janma nasyad Parshe harir yad bhajatam sham tanoti Yad-yatra-na-svarga-sukha-vise-sitam Svistasya-sukha-tasya-kritasya-sobhanam Tena janabhi smriti maj janma nasyad. Yadi.
Yadi.
Yes. Atra. In this heavenly planet. Naha. Of us. Svarga Sukha Afasheshitam. Whatever remains after the enjoyment of heavenly happiness. Su Isha Su Ishtasya of a perfect sacrifice. Su Uktasya of diligently studying the Vedic literature. Kritasya of having performed a kind act. Shobhanam, the resultant actions. Tena, by such a resultant action. Ajanabhe, in the land of Bharata Varsha. Smritimat Janma, a birth enabling one to remember the lotus feet of the Lord. Naha of us. Syat. Let there be. Varshe in the land. Hadihi. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yat. Wherein. Bhajatam. Of the devotees. Samtanoti. Expands the auspiciousness. Translation: we are now living in the heavenly planets, undoubtedly as a result of our having performed ritualistic ceremonies, pious activities, and yajnas, and having studied the Vedas. However, our lives here will one day be finished. We pray that at that time, if any merit remains from our pious activities, we may again take birth in Bharatvarsha as human beings able to remember the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord is so kind that he personally comes to the land of Bharatvarsha and expands the good fortune of its people. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, famous verse. It is certainly as a result of pious activities that one takes birth in the heavenly planets, but from those planets one must nevertheless come down again to earth, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Chine punye marchalokam vishanti. Even the demigods must return to earth to work like ordinary men when the results of their pious activities expire. Nevertheless, the demigods desire to come to the land of Bharatvarsha if even a small portion of the merits of their pious activities remains. Then there's a curious sentence that I don't think I can explain. It says, in other words, to take birth in Bharatvarsha, one must perform more pious activities than the demigods. Next sentence. In Bharatvarsha, one is naturally Krishna conscious. And if one further cultivates his Krishna consciousness by the grace of Krishna, he certainly expands his good fortune by becoming perfect in Krishna consciousness and very easily goes back home, back to Godhead. In many other places in the Vedic literature, it is found that even the demigods want to come to this land of Bharatvarsha. A foolish person may desire to be promoted to the heavenly planets as a result of his pious activities, but even the demigods from the heavenly planets want to come to Bharatvarsha and achieve bodies that may very easily be used to cultivate Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu repeatedly says, at least Prabhupada repeatedly repeats it, Bharata Bhumite Haila manushya janma jar janma sarthakara kari kara para upakar. A human being born in the land of Bharatvarsha has the special prerogative to develop Krishna consciousness. Therefore, those already born in Bharatvarsha should take lessons from the Shastras and Guru and should fully take advantage of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to be fully equipped with Krishna consciousness. By taking full advantage of Krishna consciousness, one goes back home, back to Godhead. Yanti madhyajino pimam. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore spreading this facility to human society by opening many, many centers all over the world so that people may associate with the pure devotees, that's you guys, of the Krishna consciousness movement, understand the science of Krishna consciousness, and ultimately go home back to Godhead. So there's three verses remaining, the chapter is then over, and there's only really miniature purport, so I'm going to read those. Texts 29 and 30, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, in the opinion of some learned scholars, eight smaller islands surround Jambudvipa. When the sons of Maharaj Sagara were searching all over the world for their lost horse, they dug up the earth, and in this way, eight adjoining islands came into existence. The names of these islands are Svarnaprastha, Chandra Shukla, Avartana, Ramanaka, Mandara Harina, Panchajanya, Simhala, and Lanka." Purport. In the Kurma Purana, there is this statement about the desires of the demigods. Anadikarino deva svargastha bharato bhavam vanchantyatma vimokshartho mudre karte dikarinaha. Not a translation, but apparently a paraphrase. Although the demigods are situated in exalted positions in the heavenly planets, they nevertheless desire to descend to the land of Bharatvarsha on the planet Earth. This indicates that even the demigods are unfit to reside in Bharatvarsha. Therefore, persons already born in Bharatvarsha live like cats and dogs, not taking full advantage of their birth in this land. They are certainly unfortunate. Text 31, the last verse of the chapter. My dear King, O best of the descendants of Bharat Maharaj, I have thus described to you, as I myself have been instructed, the land of Bharatvarsha and its adjoining islands. These are the islands that constitute Jambudvip. And the next chapter is studying the structure of the universe. You have to have a PhD to study that chapter. So, this has been Narada Muni speaking, what he heard from the demigods, and Shukadeva Goswami, what he heard Narada Muni say from the demigods to Sarvani Muni, Sarvani Manu, and the dialogue is, or the narration is, describing the very special features great, great fortune of Bharatvarsha. And Bharatvarsha being in the greater context of the fifth canto, it's a portion of the structure of the universe, and then, because it's going to go on to describe the structure of the universe, the rest of the structure. So this is just a portion, certainly a relevant portion for us. Prabhupada liked to speak on this verse, or at least refer to it, by as we've been hearing in the previous verses, the appreciation of what auspiciousness rests in the land where the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, where there's, he appears because there's pure devotion for him. So that's why he appears there. And so many incarnations of the Lord. Where else can they say that? Paris? London? New York? Dallas? Or we don't even mention Houston. The Personality of Godhead doesn't appear there. Why? It doesn't have the attraction for him. It's not just, you know, what the weather's like. He can make the weather whatever he likes, but the Personality of Godhead appears where there's pure devotion. And there's two main parts of the purport. That is, how fortunate it is to take birth in Bharatvarsha, to illustrate how important it is. The demigods are saying, we desire to take birth in this place. And one way to look at it is, when their pious activities become exhausted, they have to fall down, and where they fall down, because to a place where there's, generally speaking, lesser piety, that's what they fall down to, someplace. And if they're going to fall down to some place, they particularly wish to be given a facility to take birth in the land of Bharatvarsha. Or another way to look at it is, because they're praying to the Supreme Lord to take birth in Bharatvarsha, it's more exalted than their position, just like many people to pray to go to heaven from this place, because it's more exalted than this place. So persons in that place who are praying to take birth in Bharatvarsha, logically it goes that that's a more exalted situation. Even the demigods are wishing for that. And then why they're wishing for that has been explained in the previous verses by the demigods themselves. Because the place is most conducive, or as one purport Prabhupada was explaining, that of all the lands, tracts of land, Bharatvarsha is best because there the Personality of Godhead has made its appearance, and therefore the district of Nadia and Navadvip and Mayapur. So making it really easy for us, Prabhupada has simply established a temple in Sridhar Mayapur and encouraged us to go there, whether we understood how good it was for us or not. He encouraged us to go there because it's the land of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But our ability to appreciate why is that so special may or may not have been very profound. But when one goes there and the purification takes place and we don't make offenses, then at least the eligibility to receive more and more and more of the munificence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially in the form of kirtan, congregational chanting in Sridhar Mayapur. Or of course, Vrindavan. And when going to the holy Dham, hearing from the saintly persons there, and engaging in kirtan, hearing the holy name in the holy dham, or in increasing one's chanting of the holy name in the form of japa, serving the saintly persons that reside there, hearing from them. These very same activities, the other part of what Prabhupada is presenting in the purport, is made available by centers, staff opening centers all over the world. Just make note of one particular feature. When in 1966, Prabhupada was personally authoring the, according to he's incorporating ISKCON in New York. So according to the corporation laws, religious corporation laws of the state of New York, and most places it's like this, when you establish a corporation, you have to give a statement of the purposes of the corporation that identify it as being appropriate for this kind of a corporation, of that kind, of that kind, of that kind. So in describing the purposes of ISKCON, which tells us what our purposes are for the whole of ISKCON, one of the seven items identified was establishing places of pastime of Krishna. So Krishna can establish places of pastime because he appears there and he performs pastimes. So how can we establish places of pastimes of Krishna? And that's the purpose of ISKCON. And the answer is by establishing temples where the worship of Krishna goes on, because places of pastime of Krishna involve his performing wonderful leelas and his reciprocating with the love and the devotion of his devotees, and the glorification of the Supreme Lord, as we find wonderful descriptions in our Vaishnava literature, of the wonderful activities of the residents of Vrindavan and their glorifications of Krishna, or the residents of Dwarka and their glorifications of Krishna. And places of pastimes of Krishna that our founder Acharya wanted to establish by establishing centers all over the world is exactly that, where those activities in forms that are recognizable on this plane go on, but the activities that are performed on this plane, when performed in devotion, they're preparing the soul for those eternal pastimes with Krishna in the spiritual world. So places of Krishna's pastimes are being established like that. Or another way of saying the same thing, Prabhupada was visiting once in Detroit. The devotees had acquired a building. It was a large wood frame building, and that was like a big deal for the devotees that had nothing to have a building. And then Prabhupada, he visited and he commented, why do we call this a temple? Because it was in a residential neighborhood, when all the other buildings we call houses, but this is a temple. And then he explained, because in a temple, Krishna is in the center, and there's glorification of Krishna, hearing about Krishna, service of Krishna, making offerings to Krishna. Everything is centered around Krishna, therefore we call this a temple. And that's a house, because it doesn't have that Krishna-centered activity. So what I'm doing here is saying that from the purport, the merit of Bharat-varsha is paralleled in Prabhupada's purport with the centers of Krishna consciousness. Now that very much depends upon the persons who are participating in the center of Krishna consciousness, that they're Krishna conscious. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore spreading this facility, the facility going back home, back to Godhead, Yanti Madhyajinopi Mam, The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore spreading this facility to human society by opening many, many centers all over the world so that people may associate with the pure devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement. So, as taking birth in Varsha carries with it an opportunity and responsibility, serving in the one of many centers, or the number of the many centers in the Krishna consciousness movement, carries a facility, opportunity, and the responsibility to become pure devotees. One of the merits, one of many merits of Srimad Bhagavatam, is it directs us to the Satyam Param Dhimahi, the topmost standard of purity. And it's very explicit from the very beginning. The other forms of religiosity that don't focus and aim at that very, very clearly and explicitly, that's not the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the other way around. The subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is attaining that. And again our attention is directed to that stage of Paradharma, so the supreme position of pure devotional service. We're to engage in devotional service. We're to target pure devotional service. So it's not a place for lazy people. It's pure devotional service. And we're not there. But the process is to take us to pure devotional service. And the instructions are repeatedly to prompt us, and hold us up, prop us up, to aspire for that standard of devotional service. And as Prabhupada is saying at the end, if one has that opportunity, taking birth in Bharatvarsha, and one doesn't use it properly, what a great misfortune. Others, demigods, are aspiring for it, and if those who have taken their birth in Bharatvarsha don't utilize it, what a great misfortune. Or those that have the opportunity to take part in the centers of Krishna consciousness. And the misfortune should become good fortune. The good fortune should be properly utilized by giving our attention to the messages of the Bhagavatam and applying them in our lives and taking the chanting of the holy name and absorbing ourselves as best we can, with very great care and attention every day in our devotional practices, to perform the chanting of the holy name offenselessly. Take the other opportunities that we have by a center of Krishna consciousness, the opportunity for worship of the deity. Of course, in this community, that's something that's already being done regularly. Devotees come and perform devotional service to serve the deity, and that's a great facility. I'm involved in a GBC position where the devotees are entertaining, they're very enthusiastic to have deities, and GBC news bulletin this past meeting in Mayapur, GBC passed a resolution saying that for any center that wishes to begin deity worship, they must first get a certificate of readiness. And the reason for that is, it's real easy to invite a deity and install a deity, and then, you know, to begin something like that, it's very easy to beget a child. That's a whole other thing to raise a child. It's years and years and years and years, and at least a child grows up and becomes independent. But a deity doesn't grow up and become independent. It's a very serious long term, beyond our present enthusiasm situation, to maintain is greater. It has challenges beyond just beginning something. So, and because there's been those examples where the deity worship standard is going down and going down, going down, just because they don't have the manpower that they had once upon a time when they installed the deity with much enthusiasm. So it's a great opportunity, it's a great responsibility, it's a great opportunity to have access to worship such a beautiful deity worship arrangement. And the congregation here has traditionally been doing this very nicely. Some come different times and do different services, and it's fantastic. It's good for the devotees to have that facility. And then the facility should be taken up with much devotion, combined along with the proper hearing and chanting activity. Krishna conscious centers are, exactly as Prabhupada's saying, it's very, very special. Because it's so accessible and maybe so easy, you may take it for granted. Try starting a temple sometime. It's not a cakewalk. It takes a lot to start. Try managing a temple for a while. It takes a lot to keep the standards proper and keep the cleanliness and the devotion and everything proper. That's the management side. There's the opportunity side. It's a great opportunity. That's how it should be seen, because it is. The concluding part of the chapter, just very quickly, no explanation of this other than King Sagara, the sons of King Sagara, when they were searching for the horse, they were digging up the earth and they made islands. It's quite a different picture than the modern picture of how we have different continents on this earth. It has nothing to do with the sons of King Sagara looking for a horse. I have a whole other idea. And that idea is different than the previous one, and that idea is different than the previous one. No explanation of this other than just making the statement. So the cosmology of the universe is next. This has just been Bharatvarsha in this particular part of the cosmos. Shukadeva Goswami, hearing from his father Vyasadeva, had such capacity. Incredible. Wait till you hear all the details of the structure of the universe. So any comments or questions?
You are saying Bharatvarsha is the land where everybody tries to come there, very fortunate to be there. And Prabhupada could not make any disciple in India as per se. So is there anything you can... He was there, very powerful.
Sure. Two things. Krishna wanted him to come to the West. So, if things, speculatively, if things had flourished in India, come to the West. In any case, Krishna didn't let, because the outcome of one's activity, preaching or otherwise, is in the hand of Krishna. So Krishna didn't permit that. Krishna, or through the agency of his spiritual master, his service was to come to the West. So when he came to the West, there was also a lack of response for some period of time until the arrangement 1 year later, some person started to regularly take part. So that's another dimension, that is the dimension of challenge. When someone who is a pure devotee, as Prabhupada was a pure devotee, there wasn't something lacking in his purity when he began in India, or lacking in his purity when he began in New York. But Krishna was testing him, or challenging him, or strengthening his determination. And then abundantly the results came, which made it very clear to Prabhupada that the results were coming from Krishna. Now, another thing that, separately altogether, Prabhupada has often spoken about the people of India losing their piety by giving up their culture and imitating the ways of the West. So it's one thing when the people in the West are simply impious and suffering from that impiety to turn to something that gives them relief. That's one dynamic. Another is persons that are purposely running away, like away from Krishna. And to get the person running away from Krishna to go to Krishna, that's more difficult than the person that's already gone away from Krishna and they're suffering. And even they may have material opulence, they're exhausted from the unhappiness or the lack of satisfaction that comes from material gain does not bring satisfaction. So, in short, Krishna's sanction is the determining factor. And then, obviously, when the interest amongst the same population that said no before started saying yes, Prabhupada's explanation was when they saw, oh, look at even these people that have what we want, they're giving it up and they're taking what we left. European American disciples came, Prabhupada's white elephants came, and persons paid attention. Because, oh, they're giving up that thing that we're after? What is that thing that they're taking instead of the thing that we're after? Or imitating the West, they imitated the Westerners that were taking the Krishna consciousness. That made a big difference. You know, and time and sociology may have also played its part. Particular dynamics during a particular period of time. I've experienced that just here in the West. There are times when persons are, say, just, you know, the American population is less inclined and more inclined. It's very noticeable. And now is a time, that just a little report from the preaching field, now is a time when young Americans they're not just interested, they're searching. And it's the potential of bringing Western people to Krishna consciousness now is far greater. It was a whole lot more work previously. It's a whole lot easier now. They're very sincerely seeking. They're misdirected like anything, but they're at least sincerely seeking. It's a really, really good time to reach the young American population. Any people like doing that? It surfs up. Something else?
I have another.
Yeah, let's start with someone else. Yes?
How long have you experienced that alteration? If a young person gets a book versus a middle-aged or an elderly person gets a book, do you think the young person is more likely to read that?
It depends on the point. My answer would be, depends on the point of time and what's going on in their life. But you know, in today's circumstance here in America, yeah. But you know, 10 years ago, if you would ask that question, you know, it might give a different answer. Prabhupada often spoke of young people; their minds are more open. Older people, their ways are already set. But there's also certainly older people that receive Krishna conscious literature, and the light goes on. Even though, so it's more challenging because they've already, they're to some degree set in their ways. So to be open minded about something other than what that which they're set in their ways, it's more difficult, less likely. But that's not a rule. It's a, you know, a directional tendency. And there are certainly some persons that, by various causes, circumstances, things crash in their life, and the shelters that they were having, they're gone. They don't. They're happy to receive this, or it just somehow resonates with them. That goes on also. It's hard to give a general response to that question. Something else? Okay, go for it.
After all saying and preaching, you know, that demigod worship is not encouraged. So, so many homes we go, you know, they have all kinds of pictures, you know, demigod, this, and Krishna also. So, in a situation like that, I don't know what to say, what is your, you know, and they are devotees, they come to the temple, they are everything, and they have demigod full of pictures.
That's their upbringing, and it is not effective to just take their upbringing and break it. That'll lead to resentment. Rather, what to do is befriend them, be an exemplary Vaishnava. Attract them to Krishna and attract them to the devotion to Krishna, the purity of Krishna consciousness. Some persons aren't going to be attracted, but if they're going to move, it's by attraction to something that's more satisfying and more appealing. And when that kind of relationship is established, appreciation awakens and some relationship, then speaking some things to those people, that's the next step. And speaking things to those people is not with a stick in your hand, but with verses of Bhagavad Gita and an explanation of why this in contrast to that. And this is preferable because of this understanding. But, you know, based upon the relationship and based upon some appreciation, like, you know, there's something more than what I have. I like it. I don't know exactly what it is and how to get there. Some appreciation and some trust in that relationship. Then speaking things cautiously. Because I've seen so many circumstances where, even with good intention, a devotee practically drove away some people that were mixed because of their upbringing, But I'm tempted to tell some stories, but I won't. there's one couple that one sannyasi went into their home and saw one of those pictures on the altar and just grabbed the picture and put it in his bag. Sat down and blasted, you know, worship like that. And then left. He took the picture in his bag. And the family freaked out. The wife ran out of the house, and you know the president had to go and beg because they thought he trashed the picture. You know, they practically, they freaked. Fortunately, the president had the kind of relationship with that family where he was able to calm them down. He got the picture back. It wasn't trashed. And some time passed. And that family now understands what they didn't understand at that time. You know, Krishna is supreme, and something else goes over there, and Krishna is supreme. That's, you know, they understand that now through the agency of the temple president that had extended care, and they're now initiated devotees and doing wonderful service at the temple, whereas they could have just been, you know, driven away. There's one, I think it's Bhamalashva. So it was a morning walk conversation with Prabhupada where they were discussing many things, and one of the things was a man who wanted to take initiation from Prabhupada, but he had from childhood been worshipping Lord Shiva, and so he didn't want to just leave Lord Shiva, you know, trashed. He didn't want to, like, just dismiss him. So the devotee brought this question up, and Prabhupada didn't give a direct answer, and they talked about other things, and they came back. And then it came up again, and Prabhupada said, "Does he understand the difference?" And the devotee said, "He very clearly understands the difference. The problem is not his understanding. The problem is, since childhood, he was doing like this. So he doesn't know what to do." Now, different answers can be given in that circumstance, but in this particular circumstance, what Prabhupada said was, he can be initiated, instruct him that he can make a separate place where he can put Lord Shiva's picture, he makes his offerings to Krishna, just, didn't say this, but just as is done at Puri, and then the prasad of Krishna is brought to the other personality, Lord Shiva. And he's Lord Shiva's devotee, and he takes the remnants like you do of Krishna's prasadam. But he's honoring Lord Shiva in that way. He would take before him. So, but that's a mature approach. It's not that everyone should do like that, because another time Prabhupada said, in Bengal there is a saying, and I don't know what it is in Bengali, but my mother, when she was a small girl, she ran around naked. Now that she's grown up, she should run around naked. Meaning, because you do something in childhood, does it mean now that you're an adult you do that something because you did it in childhood? Just for that reason? So, that may be that at least, you know, helping persons go from point, whatever their childhood thing was, to the position of taking shelter, exclusive shelter of Krishna, there are different ways to help people do that. But it's not with a club in your hand. It's by attracting and relationship and understanding the individual the right, you know, the best possible way for their circumstance to help them go another step and another step toward Krishna. And then what that's going to look like going into the future depends on variables. So if those things exist, this isn't the only congregation where people, something that they did before and it's continuing, it has something to do with how well we're connecting with those people. This may also have something to do with the people, but it's not sufficient just that we engage people to give money to support the temple and the deity worship. and that way they do some devotional service. That's nice, but that's far from complete. It's very incomplete. And some people, if we don't make a conscientious effort to reach out and hold them by the hand and take them another step and another step, they'll just stay there. Anything else? Yes.
I'm trying to understand what's so different about India. Whenever I go to India, I feel so different. It's unexplainable. I'm just wondering.
What is it?
Yeah.
No cowboys. No cowboys.
Is it just the energy of the land, or is it the devotees?
No, it's the consciousness. Is that the sanctity of Krishna has, and forms of the Lord have made their appearance there, that sanctity, and just hearing Krishna Katha from childhood, from the very beginning. Krishna, Krishna. This is part of the culture, the piety of the people, the Krishna centeredness or God centeredness. By name, quality, having heard Ramayana and Mahabharata and Bhagavatam and about Krishna. So it's the people and it's the sanctity of the place because the Lord has come. And then what about the rest of the world? What about Austin, Texas? Yahoo, cowboys. And university, and, you know, whatever else is going on here. So, being there, this isn't in response to your question, but it's being there is response to the purport here. There's a mission when you're there. Do what you can to take some of that same auspiciousness and present it in the hearts of those that are willing to receive it. At least trying to do like that is a service. And then you can sanctify that place as Lord Varsha is sanctified. That's the idea. It's a mission. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.